So that's okay, let's go.
Good morning. The, it's called a meeting to order of the Senate Special Committee on Natural Gas Development. It's the 8th day of August, it's 9:13 a.m. Has Senator Dyson, Senator Stedman, Senator Wilkins, Senator Green, myself, Senator Seekins, Senator Wagner, Senator Bundy, Senator Hoffman, Senator Elton. Also have in the room with us this morning Representative Samuels, Representative Kelly, Representative Harris, and our perpetual also guest is Senator Gary Stevens. So with that, we have asked for some information from Dr. Van Meers this morning. Dr. Van Meers, welcome back to the committee, and we're eager to hear your comments this morning.
Mr. Chairman, a great pleasure again to be here. I managed to get through all the economic analysis and prepared a small slide presentation. The conclusions are really not different from what I already presented to you yesterday. So what I'd like to do is just quickly lead you through the graphs, and then if there are any further questions, of course, I would be very happy to answer them. I think the concept of invest or pay is already well explained. There are the two kind of concepts, the dollar per barrel rate and the R rate. That was well explained by Dan Dickinson. This is the scale of the dollar per barrel rate, which was already explained to you. I just put it in the graphs just for completeness for later reference. As I mentioned yesterday, this dollar per barrel rate is very sensitive to the production decline curve and the level of investment because it is in dollar per barrel. So in the following two graphs, what I'm going to show is what happens with the PPT rate if you simply would maintain production at current nominal levels. As we know, at current nominal levels of investment, production is declining. That is what we have experienced now already for the last 10 years. So this is the graph. The top blue line shows the level of investment. Then the bottom pink line, I think, shows the production decline. And because the dollar per barrel in nominal terms would increase as you go along, the PPT rate would automatically decline from 22.5 to, say, the 20% level. And consequently, if you want to get in your business plan to 20% PPT rate, or if your plan was to simply continue the current level of investment in nominal terms, then sooner or later you're going to end up with a PPT rate of 20% as production keeps declining. This is in nominal terms. If you would do this in real terms, if you look at the real value of the investment, what you actually see is that in 2006 dollars, investment would actually decline to almost half of what it was before over 20 years, and you would still get your 20% PPT rate after about a decade. As I also explained yesterday, if you decline along with the production decline, then the PPT rate stays the same. And that is what we see in the next two graphs. Here you see how investment would decline from, say, the current nominal level of about, I took it $3 a barrel, over $1 billion, to around a $400 million level in nominal terms. And if that happens, this is for the whole oil industry, if that happens, then the PPT rate would simply stay the same because the level of investment in proportion to the level of production would stay the same. The dollar per barrel would not change. In real terms, this would be, of course, a very dramatic decline of investment in Alaska. So what you see here is, in real terms, production really decline would, investment would decline to about $200 million per year for the entire oil industry in Alaska in 20 years in current in the dollars of today, and the PPT rate would just stay the same. So as you can see, that's not particularly a strong incentive to increase investment. The following two graphs show a potential business plan whereby a company would say, okay, since we have this dollar per barrel business, why not accelerate some investments that we were planning to do anyway, like overhaul or repairs or drilling some infill wells, and rather than 3 or 4 or 5 years from now, let's accelerate that and spend somewhat more in the next few years, and that would lead to a dramatic decline in the PPT rate, as you can see, right? In 4 years, you are down to 20%. And from then onwards, you can keep the 20% by just declining in line with production. So this would be a way to get very quickly to 20%, and then for the next 20 years, you would simply stay at 20%. In real terms, again, that would again be a very dramatic decline of investment in Alaska. So, and this is then consistent with what I already explained yesterday. The R formula, as you can see here, in principle, links the qualified capex to as a percentage of the production tax value. And consequently, if you keep the production tax value constant and the tax rate constant, which is constant, of course, then what you would see is that there is a direct relationship between the qualified investment and the PPT rate. And as I explained yesterday, I reviewed it again in my calculations, that is correct. At zero investment, the rate would be 25%. If you reinvest, 23.2% of your, total net revenues, then you would end up with a PPT rate of 20%. Now, typically, if you ask me what is the definition of a harvester, I would say a company that takes out of the jurisdiction 75% of the net revenues and only reinvests 25%, that's clearly the definition of a harvester, because he takes the vast majority of his net revenues out of the jurisdiction to invest it somewhere else. As you can see here, this is the kind of reinvestment rate curve. So this is the reinvestment rate curve at 25. If you reinvest zero, the PPT rate would, under the R rate schedule, would be 25%, and then it goes down gradually to 20%. If you decide to reinvest 12.5% of your investment, which is really a minimal amount, then you are at 22.5%. So then you can maintain 22.5%. So that is what you see there. The rate, the PPT rate decline, the percentages that you see is the qualified capital expenditures as percentage of the production tax value. And the important part of that is that eliminates price as a variable. So I have eliminated here price as a variable. So this is true for any price level. So there is, doesn't matter whether the price is $20 a barrel or $100 a barrel. Then, as Dan explained yesterday, between these two concepts, between the dollar per barrel rate and the R rate, you select then the highest rate. So, and that was meant to slow down the gold plating effects. And that is what you see here. This is actually the same chart that Dan presented. I used the same chart, but I colored it to color code what is actually happening. In the top, you see the 25% rate. So, yes, if you invest less than or a dollar a barrel, then indeed you are at 25% under either of the two systems. So it doesn't matter whether you, this is rounded, these figures are rounded. Under either of the two systems, you end up with rounded 25%. At the bottom, you see another yellow area. That means no matter whether you take the dollar per barrel system or the ARC system, you always end up with 20%. And then you see a blue area, and in the blue area, that means in that zone, the dollar per barrel rate is always higher than the R rate. And in the blue area, you see then these 20 numbers, and that are the R numbers. Now, you can see that it, in the blue area, it is very easy to get down to the 20%. So if you manage under the dollar per barrel system to get down to 20%, the R concept doesn't give any protection in terms of, say, the related, say, maintenance of the higher rate. As you go to the right, you see that pink area, that is where the R rate is higher than the dollar per barrel rate, and then at the bottom you see the 20s, which are the dollar per barrel concept. As you go to the right, it becomes increasingly more difficult to stick with the lower rates, as Dan also explained, because you need to reinvest your 23% of your total net revenues. And obviously, at $100 a barrel, that is a very significant amount. So consequently, as you go to the right, if we have very high prices, $80, $90, $100 per barrel, then, yes, there is some likelihood that you will stick around the 22, 23, or 24, depending on your reinvestment rates. At $50 and $60 a barrel, or $70, it is relatively easy to get down to the 20%. Then I talk briefly about the PPT loss. And I calculated, suppose a company spends today $3 per barrel, what is the PPT reduction if he increases that to $1.50, $1.50? And there are really three components we need to consider. What is the basic PPT loss? Then we still have the 2-for-1 feature. And then, of course, at the end, there is still U.S. federal income tax. So if you put it all together, let me actually go to the next slide. That is a little bit easier. Here in blue, you see the basic PPT loss for every $1.50 invested. And if you look at the $70, you see that at if a company under a $70 scenario, as we have today, if they increase investment by $1.50, they would get a PPT loss, or Alaska would have a PPT loss of $1.20. But if companies would be in the 2-for-1 system, which is also in the bill, and I still highly recommend to maintain that 2-for-1 system, then that would be another 15 cents. So now they're really up to $1.35, and then you still get the federal income tax reduction, and that's another 5 cents. So in the end, all companies have to do is spend 10 cents out of the $1.50 out of their own pocket, and the rest is tax reductions. So that, I think, means that really it would be very easy for companies to increase investment for a short while because, in fact, the governments are paying for it through the tax reductions. The same is true if you see the $3 chart, if they increase investment to $3 a barrel, or from $3 a barrel to $6 a barrel, you see the same overall pattern. At $70 per barrel, the companies would pay, after all of the deductions in tax, the base PPT, the 2-for-1, plus the federal income tax, they would probably spend 22 or 25 cents out of that $3 out of their own pocket. So again, it would be very easy to get down to the $6 because government is paying for it and out of the tax reductions. And consequently, that is something that would deeply concern me, because this is basically the reduction of the PPT rate is basically built in, and they do it with Alaska's money to come down to 20%. So, Mr. Chairman, that again, I like to, this is not different from what I presented yesterday, but this is now the actual graphs and the actual economic results. Again, what I like to appeal to you is, as I said yesterday, there is great virtue in simplicity. There is great virtue in a simple fiscal system like all other nations in the world have, that all other nations in the world have so successfully used to encourage investment while at the same time increase their government revenues. And therefore, Mr. Chairman, I would appeal again to the Senate to take this approach rather than a far more complicated approach.
Thank you, Dr. Van Meer. Questions for Dr. Van Meer? Seeing Senator Stedman.
Just one quick one, Mr. Chairman. I think on the last couple of slides, page 19 and whatever the last
21
was, 2021. It was a bar chart. Yeah. Can we just take these bar charts and take the Alaska portion and slide it over into the other one, and then we'd get a visual split of percentages, who pays what?
Yeah, that I could turn it into a percentage chart. This, of course, how these bar charts look like depend on where you start with, what the level of investment is that the company starts with. Or in other words, if you start with $4 and then you add $1.50, you get slightly different charts than if you start at $2 or at $3. So these charts vary a little bit depending on price. But this chart actually shows the combination of these two formulas. So the idea is that this chart shows the result of the combination of these two formulas.
So if I'm reading this correctly, then at $70 price and the $1.50 per barrel increase, the for that $1.50 expenditure, the state would pick up $1.20 of it?
Correct. And that is just the base on the formula. In addition, there is the two-for-one feature that we have in the House bill, which I supported and still support today. It's a good feature to have. And that would add another 15 cents. So now you're at $1.35. And then you still get your federal income tax deduction. So for the difference. So companies would barely spend any money out of their own pocket if they increase investment by $1.50 a barrel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Dr. Van Meers. Appreciate your being available with us this morning. Next, we're going to ask Mr. Dickinson if he'd like to come up. You need a minute or two, Senator Bundy.
Question for Dr. Van Meers. Yes,
pull that microphone over.
Thank you. Yeah. Yesterday, Doctor, there was a brief suggestion. I think it was probably not very serious, but just like to follow a little further, that if all this complicated R formula variable rate was removed and simply replaced with a fixed rate, would that reduce the gold plating problem that we're seeing here?
That would eliminate it, because of course Alaska, if there is a 20% tax credit and say a 20% PPT rate or a 22.5% PPT rate, the combined effect is that Alaska would still contribute, say at a 22.5%, 42.5% of an incremental investment. So and that is precisely how we are reducing the net investment and make the incremental investment so much more attractive. So it is internationally recognized that if you reduce the net investment, say by 40% or something in that order of magnitude in this particular case, not considering the federal benefit, then that is a strong stimulus of investment. By the time you start reducing, by the time you start picking up 80 to 90% of the cost, then you are clearly overstimulating investment. Then really it doesn't matter anymore what the rate of return of a project is, because on an incremental basis everything looks good, and then companies start to or are induced to misdirect investment and or do projects just for the purpose of lowering their tax, and that is typically not considered very healthy from an investment strategy point of view.
Thank you.
Senator Wilken.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Morning, Doctor. I was looking at my list from yesterday of the five issues that we left on the table, and following on to what Senator Bundy said, my list is, the concern yesterday was that it was complicated, that it could be a harvester's formula, that it didn't prevent gold plating, there was concern about it not being inflation-proofed, and perhaps in some circumstances the basic math, which I think you showed this morning, creates the opposite of what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. If, as Senator Bundy just questions, if we just took care of and replaced paragraph F with a simple formula, 20, 22 and a half, 25, whatever, it takes care of all five of those issues, doesn't it? Doesn't it just, it's not complicated. The harvester's issue goes away. The gold plating goes away. Inflation proofing goes away. And the basic math goes away. Is it that simple?
It is that simple. If you say if you want to keep the numbering in the bill, you could take what is now in section F out. And for instance, you could put the floor ID in section F instead, and then in section E, where it mentions the rate, you could simply say 22.5 or 22.8, whatever you feel the correct rate is.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other questions? Senator Bundy, then Senator Steadman.
Just a personal thank you. I'm sure I speak for the committee. I understand that in order to get this for us, Dr. Van Mieris began at 4 this morning. And your contribution is noted.
Thank you. Senator Steadman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's the earlier comments of Senator Wilken. I think later in the day when we take up amendments that have been prepared by my office, amendments that will do what he spoke about.
Thank you. Let's go on then with Ms. Dickinson. You have a distribution for us, Mr. Dickinson?
Yes, sir.
Okay. They've been distributed. All right. Thank you, Dr. Van Mier.
Great question.
My name is Dan
Dickinson.
Excuse me.
Go ahead.
Excuse me. My name is Dan Dickinson. I am working with the Department of Revenue on a number of oil and gas-related issues. And I basically, there were a couple of questions that were asked last night or yesterday afternoon, and we prepared answers for. Before I get into those, and they are in the specific presentations, I just want to take a second, because I don't want people to think that Dr. Van Mieris and I are on separate planets or talking about different bills. We are talking about the same bills, and I think we absolutely agree on the math. I think we're just looking at different aspects of it. I think what you heard from Dr. Van Mieris was a modest increase in investment will lead to a lower tax rate, and that's exactly right. That's what this is designed to do, to say if there is a modest increase, if there's a larger increase, there'll be a larger lowering, but all this really says is that there are situations under this mechanism that's been proposed in which increased investment will drive down the tax rate. I think what's very important, and if I could on this, on the graphic that's very tiny set of numbers on it, lots of numbers, but if we could just maybe start by looking at the last page of that, because I think it's an important perspective as we look at this entire situation.
What's the heading on that one?
Five-step calculation of the tax rate. And basically, all this does is take a number that Dr. Van Meers used and said, how much of the production tax value is a producer is being reinvested? And what Dr. Van Meer suggested to you is that 23% would be a harvesting world, and we should be looking for something higher. And my observation would be, you know, right now we're in a let's call it a $70 world, which is the column, maybe six over, and we're seeing roughly $1 billion to $1.2 billion in investment, which means right now, again, the very last page of the of four pages that are stapled together, just the numbers, not the graphics. On that very last page, what you will see is that when prices are at $70 a barrel, what we are seeing is roughly 8% of that is being reinvested into the state. And I would suggest to you that if we could, through this mechanism, raise that number to something closer to 23, I think that would be a job extremely well done. And what this dotted or line, that the stair step across here, simply shows is the level of investment that we would get at any price if we indeed did attain 23.5% reinvestment. So again, I just want to make sure that you understand that Dr. Van Meers and I are talking about the same situation. I guess the classic way is the glass half empty, the glass half full. The current rate is, I agree with him, unacceptably low in that range, and I believe raising it to 23.5% would in fact achieve what or accomplish what you are trying to achieve here. Again, when I go through the numbers here, so let me now slip to my presentation. Let's start, if I could, with the graphs. These are in a format that you have seen before, and I think one of the problems with these graphics, and it's one of the problems that transferred over into the presentations, the numbers, the graphs that you got from Dr. Van Meers this morning, and that is, we talk about what happens if there's new investment and there is no new production. And clearly what we're trying to do here is talk about new investment creating new production. And what we've done is we've taken our forecast and we've simply plugged in what would happen if that occurred. And what we haven't tried to do is say, and therefore the new investment will generate this increased revenue, or this increased production, therefore this increased revenue. I absolutely agree with Dr. Van Meers that if we're in a situation where non-productive investments are made, where dollars are spent that don't lead to increased production, then we will not have succeeded. So the first three graphs here are ones I think you've seen this form. It basically says what happens if oil prices stay at $20 a year for the next 30 years. What you have on here is the status quo. I think we've always said that at very low prices, the status quo, in fact, does serve us better than production-based, than systems based on a net. And what you see here is that the yellow line, which is the bill that we're looking at today, the yellow line lines up very closely over the first several years with the conference committee version, and then you'll see that it falls away. And in 2021, unfortunately about the same time there's zero revenues, it lines up with the governor's bill. What's happening there is, at that level of investment, you are starting out with about a 22.9%. That bill was at 22.8. And so you're seeing that practically all the features are the same. And so if at $20 a barrel, you'll simply see those two lining up together. One observation on the modeling, just so people don't get too concerned. As you will recall, when Roger Marks presented this model some 6 months ago, there is a price cutoff for heavy oil. At $20 a barrel, heavy oil investments are not being made, and so therefore you'll see a slightly different dollar per barrel in investment. Moving on to the next page, which is what happens at $40 a barrel. Again, the yellow line with the triangular points on it indicates, and what you see here now is that starts out very close to the Senate bill that passed. Again, all these bills are very close. And then as time goes on You simply see the effect this bill, under our modeling assumptions, drives down, and in about 2025, precisely because of the effect that Dr. Van Meer has talked about, if there is this investment but no additional production, you drive to a point where you're at the 2020. So again, given that set of assumptions, you essentially move from a position where the tax rates are in the 23 range down to a 20% range. Moving on to the next page, which is the same situation at 60%. Excuse me. Thank you, sir. $60. $60. Again, on all of these, I haven't emphasized where the status quo, where the governor's bill is. But then looking at this bill, you will see that this is midway between the conference committee and the Senate version. And as time goes on, and the effect that Dr. Van Meer has talked about, you see this moving down in the very last year of this on the low volume scenario 20. In 2030, you reach 2020, and the two are combined. Moving on to the next graph, what you see here, again, this is, I think you've seen this many times before, is the cumulative severance tax that would occur at each, if prices stayed at 30 or at 40, at 50, 60, 70 over time. And so you can really get a sense of the movement between the various pieces at the various rates. And what I think you'll see is the status quo and the governor's bill are the two least aggressive in the revenue arena. This bill would then come in at lowest prices. It would have the lowest amount. But what you see over time, particularly once you start to get into progressivity, this bill rises, and at something in the $65 range, this bill becomes the highest revenue generator of all the bills. Finally, moving on to the second, to the next to last page, the next to last page and the last page deal with total take. So in state share, we've now included in royalties, income taxes, property taxes, and you can see again the major effect here. The status quo, as we all know, as prices go up, the state share goes down. The governor's bill essentially maintains the status quo. There is a slight dip to it. The bills that have made it, the other bills modeled here, all because of the progressivity features, the percentage rises. And again, what you see is this bill, because of its progressivity feature, at the highest dollar per barrel prices, rises the most. The final slide essentially looks similar to this, but it's simply because it includes federal income taxes, raises the numbers, and so now the current bill is seen to rise from essentially 60%, 59.8, a slight dip. Again, sometimes when you see a tenth of a percentage point change, essentially it stays constant, and then as progressivity kicks in, again, you see it rising. So it finally ends up at $80 a barrel, the highest percentage take at 62.3%. So, Mr. Chairman, again, this bill, I think the important thing is our modeling system is particularly ill-suited to serving, again, all these trying to differentiate between the incentives, because what we've done is we've said what happens if you make this allowance, if you create these incentives, and there is no response to them. But at least we're consistent. We've modeled all of that. The second set of questions I got deals with the is on the other sheet. It is a set of numbers. It's not a graphic. And again, I want to the first column shows all the steps you need to take, and compares that as we go further to the right with the ever simpler methods. Again, I don't want to sound like it. I mean, I agree with Dr. Van Meer's. All things being equal, simplicity is better than complexity. On the other hand, if you look at this bill, the simplest calculation is the 2020, and that's one that I think we certainly think makes sense in terms of simplicity. But sometimes all things are not equal, and a level of complexity that tries to get to the reinvestment issue is important. What these three scenarios do is they go through at $30, then $50, and then $70. So the first scenario, and again, let me walk through the pieces here. If we're starting out with $30 a barrel destination, under any of the proposed net methods, that suggests that the production tax value will be about $13.37. I think folks will quickly recognize no progressivity involved here at $30. We're way below the threshold. So what you simply see is an adjustment. If we're using $4.63, the adjustment for investment is going to be 3.63 percentage points. So you take the 25, you knock off 3.63, you're down to a 21.3%. And at this level, I think as Dr. Van Meers also indicated, at this level, the R factor doesn't enter into the equation. And so that becomes your tax rate. So at this low level, where there's not a lot of dollars for investment, if you make that full investment, you drive your tax rate down to 21.3%. You then take in the credits. And what you will see is under this bill, the other thing we were asked to show is what is the percentage of gross. You are down to a situation where you're at a 4.1% of gross. To compare that, as Senator Stedman asked me to the final Senate bill, again, you start with a value per barrel of 13.37, a taxable value, and then no progressivity, so you simply apply the 22.5% rate. And then the only other adjustment that is different from the mechanism here is in the Senate bill, all taxpayers would have qualified for the $12 million, not just ones below a certain barrel threshold. so you have a slightly higher tax rate, a slightly larger credit. The net effect is you're at a 4.2% of gross. Again, the final House bill, somewhat similar. It simply has a higher a higher tax rate, and I believe there's an error there because I believe that bill would have had a $72 million credit, not the $108 for all producers. I'll check on that one. You probably don't want me to go through the other two. We went through those yesterday. I think the one quick observation is, though, at this low price, the 2020 would have taken an even lower amount than any of these, but at this low price, the status quo would have 7.5% of gross, because that's about what the average ELF is. Moving up $20 a barrel, on the next page, we go through the same set of calculations. Quick observation is that at $50, again, you have no progressivity. You make the adjustment of $3, again, a 3.63% adjustment, so you take it down to 21.3. But in this case, in fact, you need to add back about a half a percentage point as a consequence of the anti-gold plating feature. And let me just make one observation on that anti-gold plating feature. I agree with the notion that Dr. Van Meers put forward that the formula as presented to you does not include the TIE. So if during those 7 years of the transitional investment expenditures where you've built a two-for-one in, it would be entirely appropriate, if you're trying to measure what's happening, to include that in there. It's an observation. His math is absolutely correct on that point. And I think you will see that if you do that, you will then hit that cap, the 75% of the reinvestment level. But you have 21.3%. You add back a half a percent, so you're up to 21.8. Folks probably don't want to go through all the numbers here, but again, the comparison here is as an effective rate on gross, the very bottom line, you're at 12.4%. The bill that had passed the Senate would have been at about 12.5%. I think what you see is that the effective rate that comes out is very close, slightly offset by the difference in the credits. The final step takes us another $20 higher. And again, just to walk through those numbers so you can see the progression, our value is now going up, our production tax value is now going up to $53 a barrel. That's starting with a market value of 70, taking $12 in operating costs and transportation costs and $4.63 in capital investment. We're now at a position where we are generating a progressivity feature. So when we go to calculate the rate, we start with a 25%. We look at that dollar per barrel investment, and that knocks 3.6% off it, takes us down to 21.3. We're now adding back almost 2 percentage points because of anti-gold plating, 1.8%. If you had in the TIE, for example, that would be a little bit higher. You then come out, add your added progressivity of 3.3, and you come out with 26.5%. Comparing that over with the Senate version, the final version of 2001, you're starting at a slightly lower tax rate, progressivity is slightly lower, and so the net dollars that end up being there are slightly lower. Because of that difference, this bill generates a 19.2% of your gross, whereas the Senate bill would have been at 17.2. Compared to the final House bill, you're at 20.3. And again, the PPT, as introduced, is 13.8. And then the status quo, you were down to 7.5% of gross. So, Senator Stedman, I don't know if that answers the questions that you asked on this for this format. I think what you can see is, and this confirms with what Dr. Van Muir said, is as prices rise, the effect of the anti-gold plating becomes more important. And again, one of the things that as an accountant, I love saying this, one of the things that economists always point out to us is effects are always at the margin. Even at a 2020, where you're getting a 40% benefit, let's just assume for a minute that the 60% federal tax rate, that reduces to a 28% benefit, 35% taxes added to that. So even at a 2020, the sort of gold plating number works out to about 60%. In other words, the support that is coming from the reduction in the PPT and from the federal government is in the 60% range. So this bill limits it to 75, and we're really talking about marginal effects here. The notion that there's no, any time the government underwrites an investment, that investment becomes more attractive. There's obviously a point at which it becomes so attractive that you'll make it even if it isn't productive. But I don't think in either of these cases the numbers are going there. And I just suggest that you need to understand that under the PPT, that the 2020, you're already in the 60% range. So we're talking about marginal effects there. That basically, Mr. Chairman, answers the two questions I had, or the questions we were given, and I'm certainly available to answer any further questions you might have on this material.
Further questions for Mr. Dickinson? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Dickinson.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, ready? Let's take a short at ease. This morning, it's not afternoon yet, other than Mike Kelly, Ralph Samuels. Anybody named Ralph's all right with me. So, Representative Samuels.
Do we need a second opinion?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Green asked for a second opinion on that. Probably know it.
Okay, I agree with you. It's a second opinion. There you go.
You got it.
We wanted to take a moment this morning and kind of walk the committee through how we got to where we were, and some of the decisions that were made and some of the discussions that went on internally as we kind of worked this idea out. So the first thing that I had thought of is the sliding scale is trying to get some of the, as we looked at this range of trying to get some of these people to come together a little bit. And the first thought that I had was to tie it more to gas, and to say if you have an open season, within an X number of months. And I said, within open season, within 36 months, that your rate could drop. And if you didn't, then your rate went up. And if you got to project sanction within X number of months or years, your rate could adjust. And I was encouraged before I ever even fleshed that out at all. I was encouraged by a lot of people to try to go the other way and try to separate these two issues. Tying them together was going to cause more of a problem politically than trying to separate them. So that I never even put pen to paper on that one. The next thought was to try to do something with the investment, which is where we ended up coming back to. The idea that's before you now, and we'll get into some of the thoughts on that in a second. And when we originally talked, we wanted somebody to run. We talked to the people that had to do this for a living, because the last thing anybody wants to do is come up with a system which simply sounds really good and isn't practical. That's the worst thing we can do to all these people back here behind us, whether they be the auditors for the state or the accountants that work for the industry. If it's not a practical system, then it is a failure and we have not done our job. The gold plating was brought up to us early on as we went through the investment choices. We then went to the next, was to say, because of the investment, there were some problems with investment, to try to go to actual production. The sliding scale can go up or down depending on actual production. And we walked through some formulas with that, saying production is going to decline no matter what you do. And by how much, we don't know. We tried to set a curve that says, okay, it's going to decline by 5%. And the problem with doing that is every well is different. Prudhoe Bay is at 8%. Alpine is flat now, but it's going to drop off. So to find one curve for all players proved, we got into the realm of not being practical again. It sounded better than what we ended up with now, but the practicality of it didn't seem to work for anybody. So we went back to the investment scenario. One other comment on investment. We all are tending to think of investment solely on how it affects state revenues. And investment affects more than just the state. Investment affects all the players. It's going to say all the sheet metal fabricators and flow line up in Fairbanks and Doyon and ASRC Energy and all that money that gets spent in the economy. It affects more than just our revenues, because that money tends to flow. The more money that gets spent here, the better it is for the economy, not just dollars to the state treasury. We discussed putting, I know that the Senator Wilkin talked yesterday about putting an inflation indexer on some of the capital expenditures. And we discussed that, and I think that we came to the conclusion we don't do it. Education people want us to do it. And minimum wage people want us to do it. The pivot point on progressivity, industry wanted to do it at an earlier version of this bill. They wanted to have an inflation indexer to move that point, so the point kept going up. And we told every single one of these groups, on all sides of the political spectrum, whatever what their issue is, we always told them, no, you can come back, you can petition your government if something isn't right. And I would still stand by that philosophically. I understand that we're into some practical concerns right now. So, the next thing that we wanted to make sure that we did is reward the companies that invested. Because some players invest and some players do not invest. And if you invest, we wanted to give you a little bit more sugar. If you're willing to spend more money, and I've gone round and round with Dan Dickinson saying it's not fair, as you show investment increasing greatly, the production never increases. And that, when you, as long as you take into account the gold plating, I don't think that argument holds water. Your production may not increase in aggregate, but it's going to be more than it had been had you not made the investment. You will stop the decline. You're not going to spend money for no reason once you stop the gold plating. You're going to spend money to increase production or stop the decline in production. Those companies that choose not to invest, well, to hell with them. Those two companies that choose to invest, then we should incentivize and encourage those companies. And philosophically, I think that's where we all came to on the sliding scale, no matter how you look at it on the sliding scale, where we came to. Next was the heavy oil. We all talk about the explorers going out and looking for these smaller pools, but the reality is that the heavy oil is where the major increase in production in Alaska is going to come from. That is my belief, that the heavy oil is where it's at, and it's going to take money invested to do that, and we need to encourage that to happen. And this is more aimed at the heavy oil investment than it is perhaps at some of the explorers. They have some separate programs for both royalty reduction and for some exploration tax credits. And one of the most important features, and then I'll let Representative Kelly look, is we looked at various scenarios, and if they trend towards the 25 rate, as the production did, it trended immediately up towards 25. And if you get to 25, no matter what you think what the tax rate should be, the minute you get to one of the barriers, if you get to 25 too quickly, you lose the incentive. Because you're at that tax rate, it doesn't matter anymore what you do. If you get to 20 too quickly, I think the same problem exists. You're going to stop investing because it doesn't do you any good anymore. The point of the gold plating, and I believe that Mr. Dickinson testified a moment ago, or maybe it was Dr. Van Meer testified, that you get to 20 in about 10 years. What the House did is in 2011, we said there will be a study done on this, and let's take a look overall. How much investment has there been compared to what there is today? How much production? Where was the money spent? Is there any heavy oil being produced? So that it gives us 5 years to, by the time you get to the boards at these companies, the investment decisions are made, and quite frankly, at Prudhoe and Kuparuk, you have to get the three companies together, the three boards, to all agree on an expenditure before you can move forward with the capital expenditure. It's not a fast process. But in 2011, have the study done that says, what happened to production in these fields? What happened to heavy oil? What happened to investment? Who invested? Who did not invest? And let's take a look right there. And by 2011, we don't think that we're going to hit either 25 or 20. You will still have the incentive to move within the range. Because once you hit one of those barriers, then I think you probably failed. You have to keep the pressure on trying to pressure corporate behavior. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I wanted to make sure we walked the committee through how we got to where we are in our body, so that you kind of understand some of the discussions that took place.
Questions for Representative Samuels? Yes, Representative Kelly.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to come here. When Representative Samuels and Representative Hawker put together this proposal, they wanted to go find somebody that might be a counterpoise to where they were, and so Ralph came down and dug me out one day, and we spent a couple hours on the boat talking about this bill. And from the very get-go here, I've been for a higher rate, a robust progressivity. I've been for separating oil and gas, for eliminating the clawback, for a January 1 effective date, and for a floor. And was one of the folks on the House side that was pretty heavily involved in the effort, including proposing the amendments to get the bill passed the House that was 23.5% with a 0.25 progressivity, a 35 trigger, and a floor. So I think when Ralph brought this, it was somewhat in his frustration as a person who's been very involved on the House side. As well, we'd had two failures, two blowouts on this car, and it was an attempt to try to put together something that would move ahead. And a lot of the arguments that are appropriate for March get kind of worn around the edges after we've been here, going on 7 months. And so we've got a triple hurdle to jump, the House, the Senate, and the governor. And so what his conversation was mostly about was, I don't like this, and you're really not going to like it. And But let's talk about whether it has a chance of doing the triple hurdle, given where we've been in the House, where we come from. So when they went over the bill, it was apparent, a couple of things were apparent. One was that no matter where you are on the rate curve, they built a parachute on this thing that said it won't go below 20. So all of the arguments that Dr. Van Meers made certainly have to recognize that if he's a 2020 guy, that it had that parachute under it. No new credits, no new exotic credits, same credits that are in the other bill. But rather a simple bill. A lot of talk about complexity. I think it takes about a half a page on .011 to explain it and put it into effect. Pretty simple concept if you've looked at it. The concept that Dr. Van Meers had talked about before, which was based on production, which was something that I got kind of excited about because it was, you know, real results. Problem is you had to deal with the 11% Prudhoe decline curve as faced off against every other decline curve, and he had picked one, which was at 5%, and it was too crude a tool. It caused all kinds of problems. And so as much as I would have liked to have stayed on that boat, it was much more complex, in my opinion, than this one. And I don't have his credentials to speak much more about that, but as far as simplicity goes, I think it's been overblown here that this is some very complex thing. It's a half a page, and I think most anybody that looks at it can understand it. So the reason I came here, partly because I happened to show up for work early this morning and got tagged by Ralph, but the other part is to say to you that we are, the hour is late, and we got we were able to obtain 30 votes for this on the other side, and you know, dueling consultants, it's been whacked hard, and Dan stood it back up, and so it's had two good rounds in front of you here. I happened to be here yesterday, and so I've heard both sides of it. I think it's worth your serious consideration, and also your respect for the fact that we did have a tough task on the other side trying to get each of the constituencies satisfied to some extent enough to get, you know, the finger on 30 green ones. So my point, I guess, is to say that I offer a completely different look at it, or considerably different from the sponsors, but ended up supporting it and helping the best I could to get it to the point you see it now over here in front of you. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to come here and present a couple of views on this that we've presented on the House side. And as you act today, please do so carefully, recognizing it's not March. And a lot of the arguments that people are bringing up again and again, got shot through the top end months ago. So they've had a good go. And some folks in our body tried to resurrect some things that I'd love to see. But we already arm wrestled over that. Those things have been set aside. So thank you again, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any other questions for our two members from the House? Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have found myself this morning nodding in agreement with everybody who has testified. but having said that, I mean, I think one of the statements in this testimony was, we want to reward more investment. And in the testimony by Dr. Van Meers that struck me was, we're rewarding new investment, and we're paying for that new investment. I think his testimony said that with $1.50 in new investment, government is paying for all but 10% of it, or 10 cents of it. And so I'm hung up on this issue. I mean, we're rewarding new investment and we're paying for most of that investment. And I think he further suggested that new investment gets us down to 20% very, very quickly. So I'd like you to respond directly to his point.
Thank you, Senator Elton, through the chair. fall back on what Mr. Dickinson said. Right now, we have 7% of the money gets reinvested in the state of Alaska. And some people, some companies do come here and reinvest, and others do not reinvest. I believe that in a snapshot of today, that we tried to hit the middle ground at 22.5 today. Today's spending at $3.50 per barrel. The goal was to hit 22.5. Exxon would be higher than that. They spend less per barrel. Conoco and BP would be about at that, and Conoco would be below that. If you do increase, and I wasn't involved in all writing the formula for the gold plate, and if the 2-for-1 credits need to be included in there, that's fine. Let's do that. The bill, as a set rate, you're at 60% already that the government's paying. We set it at 75. At very high prices, that 75 kicks in. At 75. 75% is what the goal that we set in this gold-plating formula was. We're at 60 right now, counting the federal, counting the deduction, counting the credit, and counting the implications of the federal government. You're at 60% right now anyway, set just with a set number. That hasn't changed. We did not add a credit. You're using the credit for another purpose to set the rate. That the criticisms were we're giving them the 20% rate and they're not going to invest money anyway. Heard it over and over again. So we kind of flipped that on its head. It says, well, if you spend the money, then we'll give you the 20% rate. But you got to spend a lot. And I believe that, I can't remember if it was Dr. Van Muir or Dickinson, said it took 10 years to get the aggregate over time. And I think we need to look at the aggregate. You can't look at what's going to happen in 1 year because investments are going to go up and down. Every year you start over again at 25 in the bill. Every year you start over again. If you don't invest this year, up you go. The criticism of the small players, I don't want to testify for these guys because they make their own points. They're all smarter than I am. The criticism of the small guys, you're going to have somebody come in here and go, we have these huge capital expenditures right now, but we don't have any production. So we get to sell the credits forward and we get to do all of these things. But the minute we have production, we don't need to spend any more CapEx and our tax rate is going to go up. Yeah. Because your risk is gone, your capital recovery has taken place, and we're going to raise the tax rate. If you just set a number, you won't get that. There are.
So. Mr. Chair, just a comment, and you can respond to it if you want. I mean, I'm struggling with the concept of reinvestment, because reinvestment suggests that they're taking in money and they're putting money back in. And unless I fundamentally misunderstood the testimony of Dr. Van Muir's, they're taking in money, and then for every $1.50 they're putting back in, $1.40 of that is paid for by the state. So it is technically reinvestment because they're putting 10 cents back in. But that's, I mean, that's a...
I'll leave it to these two guys to fight out.
Okay. Different question, different subject, Mr.
Go right ahead.
One of the things that...
Normal rules that prevail. Let me know when you're done, and you don't have to answer.
And I appreciate the rule maker. It has made it much easier throughout these many days. Different question. It was one that I had planned on asking the administration, but since you're here, Samuels, I'll give you first shot. But a heads up to the administration, to Mr. Corbis, maybe that the question is coming of him also. One of the things that struck me, and I'm a little bit nervous about the approach that we have taken, but one of the things that struck me when I read the papers this morning was there seemed to be a disagreement between what you thought was in the bill and what Director Wilson thought was in the bill when it came to credits as they might apply to the situation we now have with the pipes and the Prudhoe unit. Director Wilson suggests that that investment would be allowed under this bill. You suggested that it wouldn't, and given the nature of what has happened, given the bill in front of us, it seems to me it makes my stomach lurch a little bit when we have two people that have been intimately involved in crafting this approach that come to different conclusions.
I think I would defer to the tax division, the how you define something, whether it be just deductible as a business expense, whether it be outside of the arena or not, would be set in regulation right now, and I would defer to the people that do it for a living.
Okay, so not to press the issue too much, Representative, but you're suggesting that they may have been correct in their characterization of the...
I don't know if they would call this CapEx or OpEx. I don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Dyson, then Senator Stedman. Before we get started, the chair would also like to recognize that Senator Terrio is here. I take Senator Terrio by your presence that your wife is recovering well. Our best wishes have been with her through this time. Go ahead, Senator Dyson.
Twice in the last 36 hours, I thought I understood this bill. For me, it's like reading James Joyce or Robert Frost. Then I all of a sudden fall in over my head. Having said that, since the get-go, when I first started looking at what you guys have done, I thought there's a lot of genius in this, and you really worked at trying to figure out how to do it and how to make it work, and my hat's off to you on that. One of the things that was very attractive, as Dan first explained it to me, was that you had crafted this so that no matter what happened, 25 cents out of every dollar was the company's dollar. And I thought, that's really good, because then they've got real skin in the game, and they're not. That's going to really produce healthy results. So now I'm hearing this morning, as I understand Dr. Mears' mind, that it might be 10 cents in it. And can you help me understand what happened there and why I've got this cognitive dissonance?
For the chair, Senator Dyson, I would probably refer back to Mr. Dickinson's comments, but if the transition credits were not included in the formula, as the transition credits are being used, that would be yet another benefit. You try to look at every benefit the credit gives you. They're deductible, they're creditable, there are some federal implications, and there's also the TIE credits that are in the legislation. The TIE credits, I don't think Senator or Representative Kelly can speak to that. I wasn't involved in the crafting of the formula at all.
Okay.
But we looked at every benefit the spending had given to you, deductions, the credits, the federal implications, and I would say that one was inadvertently left off. And I defer to Representative Kelly on that, who might have been involved in the crafting of the formula. But
I think that, and I'm not sure just how that got left out, but to your point, and I think it's very important considering how Senator Elton ended up on how much the buck or buck and a half is being paid by the state and how much is being paid by the companies. Of course, we always have to remember the stack of cash that comes to this, how it's divvied up, is we're not writing checks. It's out of the bundle that they bring. But the difficulty is that this discussion or debate about these two would be left without that point being addressed, which is exactly what you're trying to do. It's just you're talking to a 22 caliber on that. You ought to be talking to a 90 millimeter. So I think the guys are behind us here, and I will say this, that in all respects, the credits on the table are the same ones that Dr. Van Mears has been looking at for half a year, and he longer perhaps. What we didn't do is put a new set of credits into the batch whatsoever.
I understand.
And 20%, all of the arguments that are made about how the dollars are increased that appear to be a credit are merely applied for a rate buy down in the case the companies invest to bring it to 20%. But then the chute pops open and that's as low as you go. And so I guess you know, there's a hilltop view of this that says if you were a 2020 person all along, and that's where the chute opens and this thing arrests the descent, then we, you know, what's the gripe? You know, I'm not being argumentative, but that is the built-in piece. The other thing about the there being some fuzzy math in here, I sure do not see that. The Prudhoe, or the North Slope decline, is coming down like a rock. Ignoring yesterday's announcement, it's coming down like a rock. We're trying to arrest that, and some of the inference that, well, gosh, you guys, in looking at this, have given the companies the advantage of some decline. Yeah, we're on the back side of Prudhoe, and there's nothing anyone can do beyond jumping an ANWR and find something great or something like that to bring that up to a zero decline or increase it. But there are a couple of arguments here that have been slipped into this debate that don't recognize the reality that we've put this 20% floor under, and there isn't fuzzy math in here. The incentive picture that is laid out in less than half a page, whereas Dr. Van Meer's version was a page and a half with another rate thrown in, 15%, when he came from the production approach, which I think clearly went on the rocks, is to be very careful and not ascribe to this new version some sort of an additional credit. Not a fact. That it does affect the rate is true. And I think if you don't like the very simple half page of how the credits are applied, you don't like a buck for the get-go, make it $2 is one approach. Of course, there are other approaches, and that's a single rate. I recognize that as well. But if you, or as Senator Wilkins said yesterday, apply an inflation protection so $9 doesn't become $4.50 10 years from now. So those are things you could do. Those are levers you could pull to make sure that this thing is as responsive as they intended when they built it. And so that really bothers me that we end on the note of somehow implying that there's a new round of credits in here and they've just made this thing ridiculously tilted from former versions in favor of the companies. It needs a better look than I can give you there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I'm not implying anything. And I'm not as smart as the folks from Ketchikan, so it takes me a long time here to get up to speed on this. And I encourage both you and all the folks who testify to be careful using acronyms, not only for those of us with memory problems, but also for the folks that are watching. Back three pages in your testimony, you said that something didn't get included. And when you were trying to keep the company's investment down to a minimum of 25 cents out of every dollar, and what I missed that.
They were, through the chair, Senator Dyson, the clawback credits, which were introduced, I believe this version was long ago introduced in Senate Resources, the two-for-one clawback, it is yet another benefit of spending,
that's
not right. Included.
Yeah, so when you throw that in,
there was nothing.
Yeah, then that's what drives it down below the 25% company investment. All right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I was handed here a few minutes ago a email, an update from Econ One, and the last page of that had a graphical depiction of the sharing of the capital expenditures between the industry and the state, and I was wondering if we could possibly have a brief at ease while we circulate some of this newer information. And then
I was going to
come back to the floor.
A recess just as soon as you were done with your questions. So,
thank you.
Mr. Chairman, are we going to keep our 11 o'clock floor set?
I think it might be delayed, but let me find out. Let's take a short recess. Back to order.
Thank you.
Do we have anyone else signed up to testify in the audience today on this bill? Sir.
Mr. Chairman.
What up? Yes, Senator Stedman.
or maybe we can come back to my comments or questions after the floor session on the handout.
We will.
Okay, that sounds fine.
We will be able to do that. Let's see if this is anyone else to testify at the moment.
Sure.
Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Dr. Van Meers a question, if I might.
We could do that. And what we're going to do, just so everybody can plan, what we're going to do is we go to floor session at 11 o'clock. So we will recess shortly before 11 o'clock. They will then come back at 1 o'clock. So everyone knows how we're going. Dr. Van Meers. Thank you.
Dr. Van Meers, you've looked at this chart.
Yes.
And
excuse me, Senator, which chart are you?
This one.
Oh, okay.
And so offline I asked Dr. Van Meers if, as I understood his earlier testimony and conversations, he is worried that the House's proposal with investments that are falling into the category of colloquially here of being called gold plating will drive the states, the investments up and tax rates down. And so I ask if the yellow line here is the likely scenario that he thinks will happen. And I would appreciate your response to that, maybe to the other committee members.
No, the model to begin with is a Department of Revenue model, and they have a number of assumptions. As I testified, the inherent tendency of companies with this kind of a system would be to plan their operations in such a way that it would eventually lead, or it has a high probability to lead, to something that is 2020 or very close to that. So my inclination would be is that although you could make some forecast based on certain cost assumptions and certain other assumptions, I do believe that the actual behavior of the oil industry would actually lead to a much lower level than the yellow curve as soon as we get a few years out. But I also like to highlight, it was stated correctly in my view, that of course this investment brings in additional production. But the reason that I presented the first graph where I said under constant nominal investment, production declines by 6%. That is entirely consistent with the testimony that the oil industry made. The oil industry, when I suggested the real producer pay concept, the oil industry came back and say, oh yeah, but even if we invest $1 billion a year, even if we continue to invest $1 billion a year, production still declines at least 6%. So my first graph was the scenario precisely as it was described, that even if we continue to invest $1 billion a year, production would still decline 6%, and consequently that inevitably leads to a 20% rate over time. So you know, I would have to sit together with the Department of Revenue to go through the details of this, but the problem is this is a standalone model. What we are talking about here is incremental decisions, and incremental decisions do not easily show up or do not easily materialize well in a standalone model as DOR has prepared. I don't think there is anything wrong with the model. They have taken great care to have the right model, but it is a standalone model and not an incremental model.
All right, sorry, help me understand a standalone model as opposed to an incremental one.
A standalone model simply makes assumptions about the future whereby you study simply if you spend over the coming years so much and if you have so many revenues. this is what the state will get. It doesn't really analyze the investor behavior with respect to each incremental dollar of investment. And that is a different kind of model. And the model that I used to analyze the gold plating is what you call an incremental model, whereby you actually look into the investor's mind and see what happens with my incremental.
You make some presuppositions about what that behavior, how it will change
yes.
over time. All right. And just quickly, if you can, could you run back over what you said that the folks in the producer community could look at this and tailor their investments to be front-end loaded, you know, so that it gets them quickly to the 20% rate, and then they can, with much reduced investments, hold on to that rate. Did I characterize what you said?
But that was correct, Senator Dyson. Yeah. If we saw from the first graph that if you do what the industry has testified when I designed the producer pay, that even with $1 billion investment per year, production would decline by 6%, then yes, you could for a short period bump this up, and that would dramatically reduce then the rate to 20%. Once you are at the 20% level, yes, I agree that this formula is reset every year, as Dan Dickinson correctly stated. But you reset it at a much lower level of production, and therefore inherently your per barrel rate is already much higher to start out with. And that is what then leads to the okay. conclusion that you can maintain the 20%.
All right, that's the point. You figure that with the declining production,
yes.
and that keeps the per barrel rate up, which maintains the tax rate that you had purchased in essence or invested to get. All right, thank you.
Entirely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank Other you. Questions? Senator Wilken?
None of the doctor.
Okay, other questions? Thank you, Dr. Mayor. Ben Muir?
If we're away from that, could I ask Commissioner Corbis to join us?
Sure. Commissioner Corbis, could I ask for you to join us for a moment, please?
Morning, Bill.
Morning. For the record, Bill Corbis, Commissioner of Revenue.
Thank Morning, you. Sir. I guess it's because of the job I volunteered for, but I'm almost hourly being besieged by questions of how big is this problem that was handed to us 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, and the answer is we don't know yet. But the next question is, what are you going to do about it? And I don't know that either. I just wanted to get a sense from the administration. Is there a team working on, one, our situation? We now know we're at 6.6 million a day. And so we're refining that number. So where are we today? What are our options short term? And what are our options worst case or long term? Is there a team working on that, Commissioner? And if so, and maybe the next question is there something we have to do as a body or bodies in the next 2 or 3 days to get us over a hump or to set some sort of process in motion that answers some of these questions, knowing that we're at the very front of this problem? So while you're in the audience, I thought I'd put
well,
you on the spot.
Through the chair, rather flippantly, you could pass the PPT. Would certainly help. But yes, we are hard at work. We've got a 7 a.m. meeting this morning. We have another meeting at noon. We have another meeting at 5 a.m. I'd say that we are looking at it from two aspects, the technical what went wrong, why did the corrosion occur, that sort of thing, and then my end of the business, which is the financial impacts and what can be done to alleviate them. I guess I would say that we are very concerned and working very hard at it.
You know, I kind of liken it to a wildfire. You know, it could burn out of control if we don't give the people some comfort that we actually got firefighters on scene. So I'd like to know that, and if you could keep us in the loop so that whatever I can pass out to those people that are asking me the questions, I would like to help in providing that comfort to the people of Alaska.
Senator Elton, then Senator Stevens.
Just let me respond. We intend to do that, Senator.
Sure, and thank you.
Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, I may have given you a heads up with my question to Representative Samuels, but it was reported in the newspapers today, two kind of conflicting views of what the bill in front of us does as a given the situation on the North Slope. And I was just wondering if one of the issues that your team is looking at is whether, and I see Director Wilson joining us, whether or not Director Wilson's comments were kind of the definitive answer when it came to the application of credits to investments that now need to be made in the Prudhoe Bay unit.
I don't think that we have officially looked into that. Robin, do you have any comments?
Robin?
For the record, my name is Robin Wilson, Tax Director for the Department of Revenue. Senator Elton, I believe the question that was directed to me was, you know, how it would be treated, how those costs would be treated under the PPT. And so I attempted to sort of clarify that it would depend on what sort of costs they were. And just to be very brief, but the costs could sort of take two forms. One would be sort of repair and maintenance, and the other would be capitalized, what we would call capitalized expenditures. And for the folks at home, just sort of a simple example, if you've got a building and you need to repair the roof, so you put in some material there in a small section, that would be sort of routine maintenance, and that would be an operating cost and would not be capitalized. On the other hand, if you had to replace the entire structure of the roof and the roofing, that would extend the life of the building, and under the Internal Revenue Code then would be capitalized. So that's sort of the dividing line, and it's not necessarily a clear dividing line, because if you repair a small section, there may be some questions as to magnitude. But in general, maintenance and repair would be operating expenses, and under the PPT that would be deductible if it's a lease expenditure. On the other hand, if there is, a major replacement that would be capitalized for federal purposes, then that would be a CapEx under the bill and would be deductible and then would be subject to credits. And I believe that's kind of what I was trying to clarify yesterday with the questions.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, your answer today speaks to the PPT. Would your answer be the same under the bill that's before the committee?
Yes, Senator Elton, the variable tax rate that's based on capital investment, that's the same definition as is used for the CapEx credit. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
On that subject?
Senator Stevens was on that subject. Go ahead, Senator Dyson.
Yeah, and there is a dilemma for us, and I've spent virtually all my professional life as a maintenance engineer, and what we want to do is make the incentives for people to keep up on the maintenance, and I just slightly worry that we might inadvertently say, let the maintenance slide, and to the point where it gets to be classified as a remove and replace, and therefore get a credit instead of a deduction, which is an order of magnitude more attractive from a financial perspective. And I sure would enjoy your help on how we can put the incentives where they should be to very good maintenance all the way through the process, and not inadvertently produce a way that it can be distorted to a taxpayer's advantage. And the answer to that is way above my pay grade.
Senator, we will take that under consideration.
Senator
Thank
Stevens.
You.
No, I'll wait. Okay, all done? We're going to
We're going to recess. Do you have questions now or later? Later. Okay, we're going to recess now until 1 o'clock.
The committee will come back to order, and I would like to announce that we are adjourned until tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Adjourned.